Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 30th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we talk gardening, pruning, watering, and more with our traditional trio of guests. Joining us, horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They're here to answer your questions about gardening and working on the lawn, etc., etc. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Now remember, this is a popular show, surprisingly enough. So get your calls in early, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Bob, Fred, Greg, Ringo, your gardening calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us to answer your gardening questions today, a few friendly and familiar voices. Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York is here. Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance is here. And Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. They are all here for you. The number to call if you have a gardening question, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, though, that number, 800-348-2551. Bob, Fred, Greg, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be here.
Thanks.
Boy, it's been wet.
Oh.
Hey, enough with the wet.
It's been raining.
Yeah.
But in a good way.
He's always the optimist.
I did see one or two days of sun this year.
I mean, I think we had some days when it was raining in 40s in May.
It was cold.
Yeah. Even snow mixed in with that rain.
Monday was beautiful.
There was a beautiful
Monday
day in there,
great.
Maybe two.
Tuesday
was rough. Yeah.
This morning was nice for about an hour. It was really nice. So,
it's not so bad out there today.
No, it could be worse.
It's going to get worse before it's over.
No. Really?
Yeah, here,
not
thunderstorms,
the optimist.
Thunderstorms today.
Today? Really?
Today, thunderstorms heading our way.
Really?
That's what I heard this afternoon. But
my gosh, you'd think we'd get a weather forecast around here, but you caught me off guard. I got better. This email came in from Andrew and Jocelyn in Kingston. And they write, we planted a pagoda dogwood this past April, and it has been doing great up until a month ago. The leaves are beginning to brown and droop. We've been watering daily, and it is planted in a full sun location. Could the wilting and general decline in the appearance of the tree be attributed to overwatering? If so, what is the proper watering schedule for a newly planted dogwood? And that's from Andrew and Jocelyn.
I love that question because we get that quite a bit. Because you're planting whatever, dogwood or a petunia, and the ground needs to be watered on occasion, but you then need to let it breathe. The water should sort of leave, the air should sort of move into the soil, and so whatever that takes, if it's raining all the time, then watering it is probably not something you have to do.
You certainly would not water it every day, ever.
There's virtually no ground in this.
Yep. For a little shrub that's pot bound, that's in sandy ground, and it's sunny and hot, maybe. But particularly pagoda dogwoods, they don't like wet feet.
So would that
cause the browning leaves?
It would.
So it would definitely count wilting browning leaves. And so once a week with this kind of weather that we're having, once a week.
That's about right.
Thorough watering would be plenty. If you were planting in July and it was warm and dry, you might do it twice a week for a little while and then go to once a week.
No water at all or too much water virtually has almost the same symptom on the plant.
That's exactly right. The symptom on the leaf is the same.
It's the same. So, it's one or the other, and we know it's not the lack of water.
If you water it too much, the roots rot and the leaves don't get any water.
And they can't bring anything up, and it's the exact same concept. They cannot bring it in, so you get a drooping symptom and a wilt symptom.
We will say that if it's a new plant and the entire plant is wilted now and browning leaves, that is not good.
So it's a goner?
It may be already too late.
It's not good.
You need new leaves, so hold back on the watering, see what comes.
Okay, well, let's head to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mark in Ulster County is on. Mark.
Hello. I've got an asparagus bed I've had for decades. And the last several years, the stalks are getting skinnier and skinnier. And this year, I'm really not getting much harvest out of it. So I have two specific questions, and then maybe you can give me some general advice. Number one, I read long ago that when you harvest an asparagus spear, you're supposed to cut it an inch below the ground. But for the last half dozen years, based on what someone else said, I just snap it off, you know, at the point where it easily snaps. So is that the wrong way to do it? Should I go back to cutting it under the ground? The other thing, I manure it every year. It gets plenty of sun. I don't mulch. There's a weed problem, and I keep them under control, but there's times when there's a lot of weeds there, and I don't want to mulch really heavily enough to keep weeds out, because I understand that a plant, any annual plant, uses a lot of energy in poking up out of the ground and through a really thick mulch cover. So would I be better mulching heavily for the sake of the, keeping weeds out, or am I right not to mulch it so heavily that, you know, that it uses up a lot of energy getting up through the mulch in the spring?
Well, so a couple of things. One would be that your asparagus bed may be just very tired, so renovating that bed may be something you might want to do. So
with new roots.
Yeah, or new roots, or taking up your bed, just actually digging it up and replanting the healthy parts in the same bed or in a new bed, your choice, that's been remade, that's tilled again, that you've added some compost to. Maybe you've gotten all those weeds out. You've added some other nutrient source, some fertilizer. So you're really restarting with young plants. You may lose
a season. And that should be done in the autumn?
You could do it in the autumn. I think you could do it right now before things really get going. So if you're done,
well, wouldn't the lack of photosynthesis all summer long be a problem? Would it be better to wait until it gets at least another season of photosynthesis before I do something like that?
So the photosynthesis is coming. We've got several months of that to do, and
if I redo it, they'll send up new shoots.
So the idea would be that you're done harvesting. You're not going to pick anymore. You're going to go in and clean out so that all the viable parts of your bed, all the where the shoots are coming from now, they're not crowded anymore. They don't have a lot of older tissue, asparagus tissue around them that's not really viable. They don't have those weeds, so they can start all over again. And the sooner you did it, the better.
Yeah, he did say it's been there for a while. So generally, I've seen that older asparagus beds, they get tired. So they do respond well after. And what the symptoms you've mentioned are sort of the clues when you start to think about rejuvenating that asparagus patch. The other thing about
the other two questions.
So the mulching part, I would not add a bunch of mulch on top of that asparagus, but I would actually say to do the opposite. But actually focus on hand weeding, and I know it can be a laborious sort of job, but the more picky you are with getting in there and cleaning that asparagus bed out, the better result that you're going to have long term. So highly recommend. I know it's tedious, but it's worth it. It's harder in the beginning.
I mulch lightly in the fall after putting manure on, but then I scratch the mulch away, early in the spring. So that part I'm doing
all right.
That part,
hey, Mark, fine. We got a roll here. That's a long question. I'm afraid we'll have to hold off on the other two questions for the next show. Let's go quickly to Magenta in Woodstock for another call before our first break. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a lilacs in a bed on the property that were here before I got here. They're mature, but not huge. I've never done anything to them. They always perform beautifully. They're both in the same basic position next to each other. The red one suddenly this season has dropped. It came up with very few leaves, only on the edges of the branches. The ends, and it did flower on those ends, but everything in the meantime, further back, there's a lot of dead wood, mostly small dead wood, but now the flowering is done, and other than a few leaves on the end and the dried bracts, the tree's practically bare. When it came up, I noticed there was a lot of dead wood, so even before it finished flowering, I just took off the little tiny dead branchlets so that it would have more energy. But any idea what that's all about? The purple one right next to it is perfectly fine.
Yep, so one looks great, the other one doesn't, and the foliage is just at the end of the branches, not in the...
The foliage and, of course, the bracts, and of course flower bracts at the end of the branches.
Correct.
I should say that they are both, their feet I'm basically in the middle of a woodland, but away from the trees. But nonetheless, there's a lot of, pine needles next to them. And I thought recently I should clear out the beds from the pine needles because they don't like particularly acid soil.
They don't like acid soil, but the fact that you have one really good-looking one and one that is clearly not looking the same, and you're talking about sort of the sort of a certain characteristic look of the foliage. Does the foliage look a little different to you too? Or looks about the same?
The foliage is there's no discoloration. There's no nothing like that. Yep. The foliage that's there looks totally normal. It's just they're on the very ends of the stalk.
Yep. So most likely it's probably a problem called lilac yellows. It's a known characteristic is to kill off all the internodal branches and all the foliage, and it would just leave foliage at the very end of your branches, nowhere else, and it would flower off that, of course, right to the point where it would die. If it is that, sometimes like the pH being off could stress that plant a little bit more and therefore make it a little bit more susceptible to lilac yellows. The bad side about lilac yellows is there's no cure for lilac yellows.
Boy.
It's a phytoplasm. It used to be classified as an MLO, MLO standing for microplasm-like organism. They finally classified that out to be a true phytoplasm. It's microscopic and it lives in the plant, and when it's there, the only really way to get rid of it is to cut the plant down and don't keep it near the other plant when you do it. Now,
I can't do that. I'm a tenant. I've got to just leave it alone and let you know. I mean, I can do pruning and what have you, but I can't.
All right, because it may end up spreading to the other plant, which is where I'm going with this. And getting the needles out of there, the pine needles, that could help because, pH could be off. You could also do a little soil test, take it to Cooperative Extension, have the pH tested.
Some varieties will be more sensitive to this sort of thing than others, so your other one may be okay.
It might be fine.
This one.
And it might be the pH that's off that it kind of made it. Usually lilac yellows doesn't attack a normally healthy plant. It usually looks for something that's undergoing a little bit of stress and needles in there. It's sounding like the pH might be off. I think you got lilac yellows, and hopefully it doesn't get to the other one, but keep an eye on it. Keep the other one healthy.
It's the Gardening Show today. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward are here. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, and the time 2:22 on a Thursday afternoon. Gardening today with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward. Three or four emails here, gentlemen, and then back to the phones we shall go. This one's from Christine. It's a blackberry question. I have well-established blackberry plants, and for years have been watching and trying to figure out how to prune them so they'll produce more berries. The more I read, the more confused I get. Can you please help me figure this out? And that's from Christine.
So they're generally blooming on second year wood. There's no first year wood fruiting varieties that I know of, and you're leaving that wood. So whatever sprouted up last year would come around to fall or spring, and you can shorten them, you can tip them, but you would otherwise leave them intact. They would then branch and flower. This month coming in June, hopefully we have fruit.
So you would
July.
Tend to take the oldest growth out, is that correct?
So the year before's growth would be dead, would be brown and have no leaves, and that should all come out. So that
is
it's
that
not
true
congested.
Of other brambles, raspberries, and the like too?
Yes, all of them. Yes.
Yeah. All right, this one is from Valerie in Gilderland. Rhododendron question: after the glorious blooms have subsided and the new leaves have opened, is it okay to trim them? Looking spindly. And that's from Valerie.
Yeah, actually, that is the ideal time to prune rhododendrons and azaleas and lilacs. Anything that blooms on previous season's wood, you're going to want to let them flower and then immediately go right into pruning zone. No more than about 30% of the entire volume of foliage off in one pruning session. But otherwise, the quicker you can get to the pruning right after the flower, the less energy that's going to go into seed production, more flower power for you next year.
I've also performed what's called stumping. where you take them right down close to the ground. And it takes 2 or 3 years for them to come back. But I had some that were really leggy and ugly. I took them down, and they came back and looked pretty good.
Yep, and that's a rejuvenation-type pruning. It's important to know that if your plant doesn't look leggy, it's a great way to handle the leggy ones. If it doesn't, it looks good. Then I would selectively prune them, maybe removing a third of the oldest canes per session. If you do the stumping or the rejuvenation type pruning, it works really well for lilacs and a bunch of other things, rhododendrons, but you won't get flowers that year.
All right.
The timing on that is also a little bit different. It's not after they bloom, it's before they bloom.
Okay. This one is from John in Stockbridge. What are the best perennial plants and vines that can tolerate less than 4 hours of sun? I'd like to have a yard that is more diverse than just hostas and ferns. Talking about shade plants here.
There's a lot of great ferns.
A lot of choices.
Yeah. I just wanted to say there's a lot of fun ferns.
Yeah.
There are.
And what would make a fern fun?
color, texture, height.
I like to think about
spore structure.
Yep. Well, palatability. How good does it taste?
If they're looking for vines, clematis in part sun is a great one.
Hydrangea vine as a low light vine, takes some time for them to bloom, but they will bloom in lower light. Honeysuckle works. Yeah. All the honeysuckles will work again quite nicely. And
Dutchman's pipe.
Dutchman's pipe. Yep. Foliage vines like Virginia creeper.
I was going to say Virginia creeper is a native. And that one can tolerate full sun to full shade.
All right. Teresa in Richmondville is looking for a fruit tree recommendation. Looking for a small space fruit tree, dwarf or semi-dwarf, and a recommendation for zone 4 or colder. And that's Teresa in Richmondville.
I would stick to pears and apples.
For zone 4.
Your stone fruits, your cherries, peaches and the like tend to be a little more sensitive to weather.
In general, though peaches are fun and you only need one.
Yeah, true.
What do you mean?
Well, you only need one tree. It'll self-pollinate. Yeah. So you have a small yard. You don't have a lot of room. You want a fruit tree.
There are some of these really colonnade help. Apples, too, that are very narrow. Yes. They take up very little space. They're just almost like a straight up and down thing.
But you would need two.
But you need two or you need something else in the neighborhood. Sometimes they'll pollinate with a neighbor's plant.
That's true. Yeah, because they will produce often the pollen to fertilize themselves, but it doesn't get a good fruit set unless you often have the two, whereas the peaches seem to be able to
peaches are better to
do really well without a few in the neighborhood. The only reason why we wouldn't tell her to go with the peach route, just because Richmondville and I know that area, it's sort of where it can get cold up on those hills. So she's saying zone 4, probably want to sway towards
sometimes the flower buds don't.
Yeah, but if it is a protected spot in there, peaches do really remarkably well in New York State.
I mean, are there peach varieties that are more cold resistant?
There are, there's a number of different ones. I know the Reliant is a good one.
Reliant, Red Haven. We were doing another one this year, and I can't remember the name of it. We're a little out of some peaches now.
Yeah. Really? It's popular? It's
They're getting more popular.
You can find
at our plant sale. We heard people asking for them.
We're getting to the end.
And they're big, full-size peaches, too. Yeah, like just like Georgia peaches. Really big. I mean, you could fool people and tell them you got them from the South.
You guys got to bring some peach pie next time. Make a note of that.
All right.
Let's go to Ray in West Hurley. Ray, you're on.
Hi. I just had some dogwood trees planted on my property, and it looks like the deer are trying to sample the stalks, the trunk. I see little cuts, and deer hoofs around the and I'm afraid of like the borers, the dogwood borers, and I'm getting a lot of different advice from the nursery. I tried wrapping it, and then they said no, don't do that. I was wondering about the tree tar, and she said put a little cage fence around the trunk to keep the deer from getting at it. But I can't find any product like that, so I'm wondering, what's your best advice? The little scratches on the trunk near the bottom.
Yeah. My gut feeling is it may not be deer. It may be coincidence that the deer hoofs are in the same area, but it's very unlikely that a deer would do that this time of year. So it may not be deer. I'll just throw that out there.
And they would actually nip at the branches, that are at 3 or 4 feet high.
They have done that, which I'm not as concerned about. Yep. I see the hoof prints around the base of the tree, but it's the scratches in the bark that I'm concerned about.
So you can sort of make some makeshift various things. There's products you can use at home and to make a sort of what I call a simple deer be gone kind of recipe using rotted eggs, cayenne pepper, a little lemon juice, all work really, really well.
Yeah.
You do you have to reapply them. Sometimes I mix in dog hair in there.
Hardware cloth you can buy at a hardware store is a good, you know, small mesh wire that you can just make a little cylinder of around it.
Yep, and you can cut those to whatever size you want. So, you know, 2 feet tall.
Could be squirrels.
You don't want to go right up against the bark. You know, maybe give yourself a little bit of room, and you can make these hardware cloths, like Bob said, customs to fit whatever size you need. Maybe the combination of those two.
Smelling deer repellent type stuff, and then maybe some hardware cloth around the base.
Yep. You might also consider getting a trail camera. They're inexpensive nowadays. You set them up right near your plant, and whatever the critter is that's going to come, he's gonna get his picture taken.
Doing the damage.
Yeah.
We'll see who's doing the damage. We use them around the arboretum for both see who our nighttime visitors are, daytime visitors.
Yeah.
But also, if there's an issue, we're watching some kind of what the heck's causing that kind of damage. We'll put a camera on them, and we'll find out if it's a person or an animal.
What's the weirdest thing you've seen on the trail cam?
You know, recently we're checking them, we found just two shiny eyes looking at the camera from a distance. But usually the camera will pick up the image because it's infrared sort of thing.
Yeah.
But this is just two eyes. But the height of the eyes is what's throwing us off. You could see the undergrowth. And you could see like a shadow there with the eyes, but it's not at the level of where a deer would be. It's actually more up like 8 feet.
Like an owl?
Bigfoot.
Let's hope it's an owl.
You think it's a Bigfoot?
You know, Red, anything's possible.
If you get some Bigfoot footage, we want it on this website here.
We're working on it.
All right. That's exciting.
But the height
news.
Of the eyes was, it's just odd. It's like a deer standing on a thing, but there's nothing there. So kind of odd, but... What, the weirdest one lately, that's fresh in my mind.
This is one of the highlights of the gardening show right now. Let's go to Donna in Galway. Donna, you're on.
Hi, I have a question about an enchanted pussy willow tree. I called in to the program when it was in a 4 or 6 inch pot. It is now 2 years later, and I'm wondering when do I expect the catkins?
So you have it inside in your house, right?
Nope. I have transplanted it, and I didn't think it was doing really good last year, but this year
it's growing.
It's really very, very happy.
Great. So the catkins should have happened in April.
And that did not happen.
Right. So now you have to wait till next April.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Probably going to skip a year.
It just wasn't strong
enough. It wasn't strong enough, and probably, like you said, it wasn't doing the best, and now it's going to be outside, and it's going to be a lot happier and probably in its new location. So I think we all think that next year you'll be in good shape.
Yeah.
Okay, and my concern is that it is so happy that the branches are embroiled, you know, they're intertwined with one another. And should I attempt to shape it?
If you want to.
Or let that go till next year?
If you want to do some pruning, as we were talking about earlier, post-bloom, spring bloom plants get pruned basically in June. Doing it now is great so that they have the chance to regrow late June, July, and then set those flower buds or those buds that will show the catkins. So sooner than later.
Yeah, and I also would add that you don't want to worry about the little tiny, tiny branches that are crossing, because you can kind of drive yourself into frantic conditions by trying to get them all to stop touching, because it'll never happen.
Yeah.
So don't start and looking at all the little ends that are touching, because that's okay. Go down to plant and look for the larger branches that maybe have some major rubbing or intertwining issues. And that would be where I would focus my energies, which would end up being more productive in terms of the health of the plant, but it'd also be probably a lot less cuts than trying to tackle the small intertwining stuff, which is kind of okay and normal. Yep.
All right, Donna. Well, thank you very much for the call. And now we go to Audrey in Western Massachusetts. Audrey, you're on.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm calling because we have two, I'd say, probably 12 to 13 foot tall rhododendron bushes, and they're right off our back deck. And we also have another one in the middle of the driveway. And we've been in this house for about 4 years, and they've just been so healthy, these beautiful blooms. And this spring, all the leaves died. There's There's a little bit left on the bottom, some of the very lower branches. And my next door neighbor, who he's maybe 20 feet lower than we are, his are fine, but his are away from his house. And so I've heard theories that, you know, because it warmed up in the spring, they went for water, but the ground was still frozen, so they didn't get it. But I don't know if this is something you've heard of. I know other people who have had this issue this year with the rhododendrons near their houses. Like, so I'm wondering if it's part of the way that they filled when they put the houses in. You know what I mean?
If they're 13 feet high, you know, they've been there probably for 40 years, you know, maybe even longer.
Yeah.
So they've gone
through. Yeah, the house is 50 years old.
Yeah, they've gone through a lot of winters, a lot of changes in winter. This one that we just had did do some things that you're not alone there. There's definitely a lot of potential damage out there. And just as you described, the one next door looks fine and the ones, you know, 50 feet away are severely damaged. If you have any little bits of green buds coming out on the wood higher up, even though the leaves are all brown, if the actual little buds next to the leaves or at the ends of the branches are green and alive, then you could continue to wait and they will hopefully push out and then you can make some decisions about whether or not to prune it.
Sometimes on older ones, too, you want to look down closer to the ground, maybe 3 or 4 feet up from the ground, to see if you see any damage to the bark, because rhododendron borer will get into rhododendrons that are older. And sometimes the damage doesn't show up until we have a severe winter, because basically the borer damages the plumbing and the moisture isn't translocated to the outer leaves. So you may want to be looking at the trunk to see if you have any kind of damage on there down below.
And so either way, though, if the wood now...
If the wood is still showing life, leave it.
If you can see live buds, and if you can't, you can also just sort of scratch the wood at some point at the top or at 5 or 6 feet and just scratch the bark just a little bit to see if it's green behind there. And if it is, again, continue to wait. Some of these buds may emerge, and then you can make your pruning cuts after that.
Yep.
And, of course, if they don't, then you will be taking it down. Sounds like you'd be taking it down severely. And it should regenerate because it's still alive at the bottom.
And that's the kind of plant that, like an old spindly lilac, a rhododendron, that it needs to get reduced quite dramatically because of either health issues or it's getting too big for its spot. This is a plant that can take some severe rejuvenation pruning as long as it's done at the right time, which ideally you want to do it prior to spring growth. So, you know, we'll have to kind of see. It's kind of a waiting game, but definitely scratch those branches. If you see green, I would continue to wait. If you see brown, when you scratch them, there's no form of life, then we kind of have a pretty good idea that, you know, it's not looking too good.
All right, let's go to Marjorie in Amherst. Marjorie, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have three fairly quick questions.
Okay.
The first one is about milkweed. I had a few plants last year, and there was quite a bit of monarch activity on them, although also stink bugs that killed the larva. But there were monarchs, and so now I've got like dozens of them in my flower bed, and I would like to move them. And people have told me that that's not so easy. Is that a problem, or can I just sort of dig? I mean, how deep when I pull them out? Like if I pull out one, it's just a stalk on the bottom.
Yeah. So what
but
they
I presume
do
there's
is
more
they.
To it.
They're very, I think the term is rhizomal.
Rhizomal.
So
they're
your
going
first
from one
ones
to the
were,
other, underground.
Yeah, they took off and made a new group next door. So as much of that root as you can take, you know, if you can take,
I see,
7, 8, 10, 12 inches of that, it probably will transplant. But you want to just sort of carefully, I would carefully excavate out the roots, bare root it, because it's the only way you're going to get it out. Get as much root as you can, cut where it seems appropriate, and replant.
Yep.
With this wet weather, you should be successful.
Uh-huh. Yep. You might lose some, but you should get a lot of it to work.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's good news. And then the next question is about a verbenum that has gone so tall that it doesn't. Now I can't use my automatic light when I come in because it covers it. So I would like to trim it. It's probably about 15 feet tall and it's just prolific in the spring, with blossoms. Is this a time where I could trim it back? Is there anything I need to watch out for in doing that is the time?
I would wait till the flowers are done. And if it's done flowering, then it's going to be okay. Kind of like the lilacs and the other plants we talked about after they get done blooming, it's a good time to selectively prune them. So you just want to make sure you're making good pruning cuts. Good resource out there is treesaregood.org. It's a free resource put out by the International Society of Arboriculture. It's like to say facts proven through research information. So you get the opinions out of there. And they give you good diagrams. So if you're already familiar with pruning, great. But if you need to go to somewhere to look at diagrams on how to prune, good cuts are going to let the plant be able to seal those wounds up. They don't heal, they seal, or they don't seal and rot gets in. So good cuts.
Okay.
No more than 30% off at one session. And otherwise, you should be in good shape.
And it's called Trees Are Good.
Yeah, treesaregood.org for the. It's a free resource put out by the ISA, and it's.
And that would be the same for lilacs. How to prune those?
Yeah, it's not going to get into all the specifics different? For every single shrub, but it's going to show you the basic diagrams on how to make the cut, and that is the same for lilacs and rhododendrons, and our forsythia. Mm-hmm. There's a whole arsenal of them.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much. Appreciate
you got it.
Thanks, Marjorie. Let's take a break. It's the Gardening Show today. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, Bob Graves are here. And you at 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's the Gardening Show today. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves are here to answer your questions. And Fred, oh, it's getting to be that season where the exciting stuff happens over at Landis Arboretum.
It is. It's we just finished up our plant sale. It was very successful, so thanks for anyone that came out to support the Arboretum. And we did really, really well, and we're getting ready. You know, literally one door closes, another one opens. We're getting ready to kick off a summer concert series coming up June 21st, our full moon music series is kicked off this year with Sean Rao, who will be opening the event on June 21st, and that's going to start at 7 p.m. It's rain or shine. The event will be indoors, but we'll have indoor, outdoor. And that same day, June 21st, since a lot of people are talking about pruning, I'm also teaching a pruning class at Landis Arboretum at 9 a.m. Now, if you plan your day right, you can actually get out there at 9 a.m., take pruning with me, do a hike at the Arboretum, go for lunch at numerous places in Schoharie County that are great.
Yeah.
Come back and catch Sean Rao kicking off the music series with a full moon, if all goes well, coming up over the valley. And all the events for the year are all posted online, landisarboretum.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/LandisArb. All the events are posted for 2019 already on both Facebook and the website.
How late are you open?
Dawn to dusk, really? Except for, of course, you know, the nights when we have concerts, and then it's later. And then we also have star parties from the Albany area. Amateur astronomers come in, and they bring big telescopes, and those star parties, of course, are in the evening. And there's no charge for the star parties. A lot of events are free. Some of them are charged.
Okay.
They're all the info's on the website.
Are you going to have a Bigfoot watch?
We'll talk. We'll talk.
We should definitely be out there with the night goggles looking for the Bigfoot, right?
We might be doing something like that. We'll talk, right?
All right, fair enough. Greg Ward, anything happening over at Ward's Nursery?
You know, Ward's Nursery is happening, you know, pretty crazily. It's planting time. Lots of you know, if you're you know, thinking about tomatoes, it's a good time to.
You know, we had this guy who stops in the station from time to time, and he brought these tomatoes the other day. And they all had wilty leaves. I said, this does not look good. Do you want to be spreading these around? And he assured me that they were fine, but they did not look good.
I would say that if you trusted his judgment.
Which I do not.
Oh. Well, I was going to say that they were probably just a little dry.
That's what I was going to say. Maybe drought-stricken.
Yeah. Okay.
Because this time of year, you shouldn't see a lot of blights unless it came from the greenhouse itself. And in which case, it wouldn't just be a sort of a droopy, green-looking tomato. It might have some browns or tans.
Yeah, next show, we'll probably be discussing the potential for tomato blight.
Okay.
If the weather stays like this, it may be something we're talking about.
All right, fair enough. And Bob Graves, anything going on over at Fadigan's?
Yeah, we have our events listed at our website, fadigans.com. And feel free to take a look and see what's coming up.
All right, sir. Let's get back to... Oh, wait. A couple of emails here that Jimmy Lavoulis brought in here. This one's from Paul. Paul writes, I need to have some peonies in the next few weeks to make way for construction. Oh, move them. I understand mid-August and later is the time to divide peonies. Please comment on recommendations to move them early.
You know, they're coming into bloom now. They're just about ready to be, you know, begin.
Yeah, it's not great.
June is usually the best, you know, the great peony season. However, if you are willing to take the whole clump, lift that, put it in the wheelbarrow, bring it over to the spot and drop it back in, it probably won't mind that whatsoever.
Okay.
I guess we really recommend that he tries to get a bigger root mass on that peony clump as he can, because it is definitely less than ideal time to move them.
Okay.
So the bigger the root mass, most likely increase the chance of success.
All right, roger that. This one's from James in Kingston. One of my rose climbers shows yellow leaves at the end of a cane. All my other roses are fine. What's up?
At the end of the cane?
That's what it says. It says, one of my rose climbers shows yellow leaves at the end of a cane.
I did see, you know, crazy as it is, but voles and rabbits, we were talking about that damage before the show, and I actually seen that on quite a few times on roses this year.
Oh, they'll eat them.
So if they have one of the canes is girdled or partially girdled, you would see that where that chewing would occur, and that would, of course, do that. It would be an isolated yellow, everything else looking good.
There's also a lot of things that could make a few yellow leaves on the end on roses. There are a lot of leaf diseases that could just do that.
With all this, with all this weather, moisture, it's not unlikely that you've got some fungal issues.
And if it's otherwise looking pretty leafy and green, I wouldn't worry about it.
And this one is from Lynn in East Otis. I recently inherited a 20-year-old Christmas cactus. I've been watering it once a week and feeding with cactus food. I know that it requires special care in order for it to flower at Christmas and Easter. What year-round routine will keep my plant healthy and happy?
Benign neglect. Don't fuss with it too much. Don't overwater it. Don't overfeed it. Keep it in a bright spot. Don't repot it unless it really needs it. And I think what sets the bud is the cooler night temperatures in the fall, right?
Yeah, so simply leaving it in the room that the window open is good enough. Yeah. You can move them. You can put them in and out. Usually if you put them outside, a covered porch, so you're not worried about it raining on it all the time. But
just bring it in before it freezes.
Yep. Yeah. Sometimes too much care, and that's, you know, words of wisdom from Bob there, because too much care and you end up killing your winter Christmas cactus.
Do they really flower at Christmas and Easter? Are they Catholic? What's up with that?
Short day, cool weather plant.
It's so triggered by the
two different plants. Yep. So there's an Easter one that blooms at Easter, and there's one that blooms at Thanksgiving to Christmas.
That is amazing. So if you move them, it's excommunication, right?
It can be.
Let's go back to the phones and Michael in Cummington. Michael, you're on.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could tell me how to keep my cats from digging in my newly formed flower garden. I got birch bark mulch, but they just seem to keep digging up bulbs and stuff.
Good boy.
Small fence would, be, kind of ideal if you just, with cats, they don't think they're typically going to go up and over a fence, even though they could.
Cat repellents, but I don't know how well they work.
I don't know.
I got a couple bags of that. Doesn't work that well.
You could keep the cats inside.
Okay. Well, maybe he doesn't want to. Maybe he's out in the country.
Small fence would, if it's doable, you could get some relatively inexpensive fencing out there, whether they, sell it for deer fencing, and you can cut it in half and put it up. Uh-huh. It's really on rolls, very light. You can put it up and take it down, or you can make more of a permanent type structure. But either way, it's hard to beat a fence for some of these persistent
critters. You could plant some catnip.
In a different area.
Oh, that's a good idea.
A diversion.
All right,
Michael, thanks for the call. Now we go to line 8, John in Rosendale. John.
Oh, hey, thanks, guys. My 100-year-old hemlock hedge, I know it's too late in the season to prune it ideally. What are the negative consequences if I prune it now with its new growth on it?
I actually say that your ideal time would be to let all the new growth flush out, and then once it stops kind of flushing out, then you actually would go in there and prune it.
So you're part of June, July.
You're not even in the ideal peak time yet. You're approaching it.
Oh, okay. I thought it was early spring.
Nope, because if you prune it very early spring, it's before any of the growth. So then all the new growth, literally after you get done pruning, it all shoots out, and then you got to go prune it again. So, generally with those type of evergreen plants, evergreen shrubs, hedges, generally just let them flush out, let them do what they want. They're making food, they're photosynthesizing, storing energies, and then after that new growth sort of stops growing, go in, shear it off to whatever. If you want it back to the original, you'll be able to see the line of new growth and old wood, and you can keep them right maintained that way. Or if you want to let them get a little taller, you're going to be the boss at that stage. So mid June, and
I've found that the last best time to prune your hemlock hedge to keep it pretty much the same is late July by August 1st.
Okay,
that you could do it any time before that in July, But right, you got to get it done by August 1st.
All right, John, thank you for the call. It's Vox Pop, the gardening show today with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward. And now it's time for our friend Bonnie in Sheffield. Bonnie, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I have three quick questions before I go over to Ward's to do some shopping. First, I have bulbs that didn't get into the ground in the fall. Do I just toss them at this point? Is there anything? Can they be planted?
Probably you might as well toss them.
That's a fast one. And in all of my lilacs, I have about 5 or 6 of the vulgaris, and then about, I think I have 6 or 7 of the really pretty ones that all of them, all 11 or 12, did not really do well this year. And was that something that was generally the situation because of all the rain, or is there something that I should do? I mean, they've been here for a long time.
When you say didn't do well, you mean flower?
Flower.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's usually about what they did last year. So they probably had a heavy bloom last year, put out a lot of growth.
They did. They were really prolific.
Yep. And so they just can't always do it 2 years in a row. So now that they're starting up this year, they should set some buds for next year and look good.
Yeah, sometimes they're what we call alternate. They'll bloom heavy 1 year and then not so much the next year.
Is there anything I should do special in terms of either pruning or fertilizing?
You know, certainly if you are going to prune them, your time to prune them would be immediately after they flower and no other times to increase the maximum. And if you do have spent flower heads on them, I recommend taking them off because the energy will go to seed production, and you want that energy to go to not seeds but next year's flowers. So that'll help just, you know, deadhead to take the spent flower heads off. And if you never fertilize them and they've been in there a while, it's not a bad idea to give a little bit of an organic sort of complete fertilizer with trace elements, and you can pick that up at
I do
on your
fertilize.
Trip.
Yep. I didn't do it last year.
Yeah, so a little bit. I don't think that's the main factor, though. You know, it's like it's what the
other. How many years does it take before you can start using the rhubarb I planted 2 years ago?
Oh, you can. I think you could definitely pick some right now, for sure, right now.
And great. And then the last question is, what was the name of that book or website you recommended about pruning?
Oh, just treesaregood.org. Treesaregood.org. It's put out by the International Society of Arboriculture, and it's research-based information. So it takes the sort of the opinions out of the how to do things for the trees and plants. So I opinions are never great when you talk science.
There are a lot of experts on the internet, I've noticed.
You know, there really is. And if you really are careful, you can pretty much find the answer to anything.
Find any answer you want.
You can find the wrong answer.
Right, even if it's wrong.
Okay, let's go to Bob in Round Lake. Bob, you're on.
Hello, this is Bob.
Hello, Bob. Go ahead, Bob. Yes.
I have a question. We have an overgrown garden for several years, and we're older people. I'm 70. We're going to get it dug out and started out again to clean out the old foliage. And I wonder if there's a good gardening book for getting started with gardening for native plants. This is a narrow yard, 6 to 8 feet wide, south, west, and north exposures.
Okay.
There is a book, and I can't remember the title.
Oh, boy.
It's terrible. If you wanted to email me, gward@wardsnursery.com, or just go to the website and send an email to the link, I'll get that.
Wardsnursery.com.
Wardsnursery.com. I'll find that for you.
Anybody else have any suggestions for a book?
You know, the only thing I would suggest is, you know, since you're going to be talking planting things, and it sounds like you want to get into, you know, installing a lot of shrubs and trees, then, you know, it doesn't really matter in terms of whether they're natives or exotics in terms of how they're planted. So you want to make sure, you know, the best way to get a plant doing good in your yard is to plant it correctly. And it sounds really, you know, simple, like green side up, brown side down. How could you go wrong? But, you know, most of the years of consulting and different problems I've seen in landscapes, so much of it originates from bad planting practices, just improper. There's a lot of things from overdoing it and putting way too much compost in the soils and not matching the sites. And so, again, that same website, treesaregood.org, there's some great diagrams there, just how to install and you know, make sure that you're planting them correctly, and that's going to be the best way to, no matter whether it's native or exotic or anything else,
okay,
to have the best, you know, best chance for your plant to survive long term. They should theoretically do really good and get better as time goes on, but they cannot do that if they're not planted correctly. So can't say that enough.
All right, Bob, thank you very much. Gail in Saugerties. Gail, you're on.
Hello. Hi, Gail. Gail in Saugerties.
Gail, you waited all that time. Let's go over to John. John and Vernon, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a former neighbor. She planted some plants in front of my house, and I understand they're called iris. I'm kind of wondering, should these things be cut down during the fall and the winter?
They're called iris?
Yeah, I guess they're called iris. Yeah, they're
iris.
Like a purple and white flower.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, so they're going to they're flowering now, or are they budding up now?
Yeah. Yeah, they're flowering now, and it's come up pretty tall. So.
Great. It sounds great. Yeah, so they will be there with foliage, with leaves, for the rest of the summer. The bloom will go for the next few weeks and then be finished, and by July just be foliage. And then the foliage will discolor when we get some frost in October, and then you can cut them down when the leaves have discolored.
Okay. Well, cut them down to close to the ground, or
right close to the ground, yes. And then they'll wait all winter, and they'll pop up again next spring.
Yeah, but do wait till that foliage really starts to discolor; it'll turn yellow, even brown tinges, because that means most of the energy went back to that bulb.
Okay,
so wait for that point.
Over to Patricia in Bennington. Patricia, you have about 35 seconds to pose the question.
Oh, thank you for taking my question. So I have this astilbe plant that's probably 12 to 15 years old, and it used to be a beautiful, deep, vibrant color. It seems to be fading as the years go by. I just give it a basic ortho plant food, but I'm thinking, I don't know if I need to feed it something special as astilbe, because it's a very faded-looking pink now instead of the deep color that it used to be.
Is it getting more shade than it used to?
It is near Breezeway, which is a connector between our house and the garage, but it gets full sun probably until about 5 in the evening, so that's probably one of the sunnier places.
It's otherwise, the foliage looks good. It's a very large plant. It's not diminished.
It's very large. Yeah. It's very large. Yes. I didn't know if I needed to dig it up and divide it or put it some other place.
Okay.
I'd say it's reverting, you're losing some color just due to age, some reversions. The new root growth or the new shoots that came up are not the original ones. There's some variation there. I mean, it can happen.
Okay. Well, I guess that is where we will have to leave it. And thanks to the panel and thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from the Gift Garden, Bennington, Vermont, florist.giftshop. Featuring fresh flowers, arrangements, gourmet gift baskets, home decor, candles, gifts, and more on Main Street, thegiftgardenvt.com. Vermont Coffee Company, organic coffee in the brown paper bag, available at local grocers. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks. And Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic on watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Well, once again, thanks to Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia for joining us today. And once again, thank you for listening. Great calls, as always. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Thanks to Amber Sickles for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, oh boy, oh, we're going to fire up the grill, light the coals, a discussion of grilling and barbecue with Jumpin' Jack's Drive-In and Capital Q Smokehouse. I won't be able to sleep tonight. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.